To you as well, coming up on Five Live Breakfast, we're about to speak to someone who's trying to get out of Lebanon.
Also, the Prime Minister has been meeting Donald Trump in New York.
And there's a new report into how many gambling ads football fans are being exposed to. Spoiler alert, it's a lot.
The Voice of the UK.
This is Five Live Breakfast.
Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Five Live Breakfast. Chris and Claire with you today. Here are the news headlines at 6 o'clock. Pressure is growing on the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to agree to a ceasefire deal with the Lebanese militant group Hezbollah. Sir Keir Starmer has used his first speech to the UN General Assembly as Prime Minister to call for an immediate pause in the fighting. The Prime Minister warned of a wider war if hostilities were allowed to continue.
I call on Israel and Hezbollah, stop the violence. Step back from the brink. We need to see an immediate ceasefire to provide space for a diplomatic settlement. Because further escalation serves no one. It offers nothing but more suffering for innocent people on all sides.
Mr. Netanyahu will address the Assembly later today.
The Prime Minister has had dinner with Donald Trump in New York. Sir Keir Starmer visited Trump Tower last night after his address to the UN. The PM, who was joined at the meeting by the Foreign Secretary David Lammy, is now flying back to the UK. Sir Keir had hoped to meet the Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris, but couldn't due to diary challenges.
A man has been arrested in connection with what's been described as an act of cyber vandalism at most of the biggest railway stations in England and Scotland. British Transport Police say the man works for Global Reach Technology, which provides Wi-Fi services for Network Rail. Passengers trying to access the Wi-Fi were diverted to a page that police say displayed Islamophobic messaging.
A study has found the number of gambling adverts such as pitchside hoardings and shirt logos during the opening weekend of this season's Premier League were almost treble last year's figures. Researchers from the University of Bristol counted more than 29,000 gambling messages. The government said it's committed to strengthening protections for those at risk.
And a year to the day since the Sycamore Gap tree in Northumberland was felled, the National Trust is offering communities across the UK the chance to request 49 of its saplings. Some have already been promised to sites. One will go to Backwell in Bristol in memory of a 12-year-old boy who died of cancer and all children facing the disease. It will be known as Fergus's tree. Here's his mum, Ruth Yard.
There's something about the story of the new life being created from the Sycamore Gap that made me think of all the children affected by childhood cancer. They deserve a second chance of life.
I like that. That's a nice story, isn't it? Let's get the weather forecast for today and give us an idea of the weekend, will you, as well, Simon? Morning.
I'll see if I've got time, Chris. Maybe okay. Later in the programme.
No
but
problem.
Today, it's all about the rain, Chris, because it's been a very, very wet night. So you may be waking up this morning to some flooded roads. There could be some disruption to your morning commute, especially across parts of Yorkshire and the Midlands. And it's still raining across the Midlands and through southern areas of England. Some of that rain is particularly heavy. There's still the amber warning, actually. No, sorry, excuse me. The amber warning has now just expired. But, of course, the impacts, that flooding problem, will continue throughout the course of today. The rain is going to eventually move to the southeast. It'll take a while before it clears southeast England, perhaps later in the day. But elsewhere across England and Wales, there'll be some sunny spells developing today. Quite a brisk northerly wind. It's going to feel colder. Maximum temperatures only really getting to about 11 to 13 degrees. Scotland and Northern Ireland looking largely dry. There'll be some sunny spells. One or two showers coming in on a rather brisk northerly wind with highs of only about 7 to 12 Celsius.
Simon, thank you. Let's get your sports headlines so far this morning. Nick Hatton's here. Morning, Nick.
Good morning. Tottenham overcame the early dismissal of Radu Dragozin as they beat Azerbaijani side Karabag 3-0 in their opening game of this season's Europa League. Rangers were 2-0 winners at Malmo. Celtic are the first Scottish side to qualify for the Women's Champions League group stage since it was introduced 4 years ago, thanks to a 5-0 aggregate win over the Ukrainian side Vorskla at Poltava. Arsenal overturned their 1-0 first leg deficit against Hecken to go through 4-1, while City City were 8-0 aggregate winners over Paris FC. Pace bowler Josh Hull has been ruled out of England's tour of Pakistan with a quad injury. The RB Formula One team has confirmed they're dropping Australian driver Daniel Ricciardo for the final six races of the season. And Jack Draper is through to the third round of the Japan Open. It's after beating second seed Hubert Hurkacz in straight sets.
The Voice of the UK.
This is Five Live Breakfast.
Good morning then, and good to have your company. It is Five Live Breakfast, Friday the 27th of September. It's Claire McDonald and Chris Warburton with you this morning. Let's give you a little bit of an idea of what we're going to get into over the next hour and into the rest of the programme. Obviously talking about the situation in Lebanon, Israel striking Hezbollah with full force is the way that the Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu has described it. Despite ceasefire calls, despite what is going on at the United Nations. So we'll catch up exactly what has been happening at the UN. And we'll speak to a guest in just a few moments, a British citizen who is trying to find their way out of Beirut. So we'll talk to them shortly.
Yeah, we'll also bring you more on the story you would have heard in the headlines there, that gambling messages have basically trebled in the Premier League from last season to this. We'll talk to the people who are behind this research from the University of Bristol. But what it kind of how that plays out, because there is a worrying there's a worry rather that children are being exposed to these messages more and more and more, and that is not the direction of travel the government said we should be going in. So we'll speak to the lead researcher on that.
We're going to catch up with Tom Lockyer, the Luton Town captain, of course, a little later on in the program. Collapsed during that match against Bournemouth in just December, so we're only talking what, 9 or 10 months ago. He's back in a sort of training of sorts with the team. Last month he went back into that, but we're going to talk to him about his call for supporters to learn CPR and how vital that is, all part of World Heart Day, which is coming up in a couple of days' time. So we'll talk to Tom.
We were having a chat about My Mum, Your Dad. I don't know whether you know this show, Chris.
A bit. I've seen clips. I haven't watched it. I know you've been following it more closely than I have. It looks good, though.
It's a really uplifting programme, and Rach and I were chatting about it, and Maria, who features in the programme, was listening in. She's a listener to Five Live, listener to Five Live Breakfast, and she texted in to say, thanks for talking about it, because it's kind of, I mean, it's so refreshing to have a kind of grown-up programme about relationships and honesty and actually have parents in midlife trying to find love again and having their kids be involved in that and being kind of open and honest about their feelings and kind of teaching their kids that it's okay to be this way and what the generations can teach each other and learn from each other. It's a really uplifting show. Maria was listening in. She texted the programme. She's coming on in the next hour.
So
we'll catch up with her.
That'll be good. And what have Kim Kardashian and Elizabeth Taylor got in common? Well, they knew each other pretty well. And in fact, Kim Kardashian has been talking to the BBC about being the last person to interview Elizabeth Taylor before she died 13 years ago. So it's part of a new series that has been put together, Elizabeth Taylor, Rebel Superstar, which you can see on the iPlayer now. So we'll hear from Kim Kardashian, not live.
She's getting up.
If she answers the phone.
What a booking.
You know what she's like. Anyway, we will hear from her, though, in due course. It's 7 minutes past six now.
But let's start this morning with the latest on the growing conflict between Israel and the Lebanese armed group Hezbollah. Cross-border attacks by Israel and Hezbollah have left tens of thousands of people displaced on both sides. In Lebanon, recent Israeli airstrikes have killed 600 people and left thousands injured.
Well, Keir Starmer is on his way back to the UK after speaking to other world leaders in New York, and the Prime Minister told the UN General Assembly that both sides must step back from the brink of an all-out war.
I call on the Security Council to seek political solutions that can break repeated cycles of violence like that in the Middle East. The region is on the brink. We need an immediate ceasefire between Israel and Lebanese Hezbollah and the implementation of a political plan which allows Israeli and Lebanese civilians to return to their homes to live in peace and security. That security will come through diplomacy, not escalation.
Our diplomatic correspondent James Landale has sent us this update following Keir Starmer's speech.
Today at the United Nations, the diplomacy has ebbed and flowed. At the beginning of the day, there was some optimism, a joint statement, lots of countries, the Americans, the G7 nations, the Europeans, some Gulf countries, all signing a joint statement saying there should be a 3-week pause, a ceasefire, between the Israelis and Hezbollah. The fact that everybody had signed up to that, particularly the Americans, meant there was some sense of, OK, this is a diplomatic achievement. Will it work? Well, initially, Israeli diplomats were relatively sort of neutral about it. The Israeli ambassador here said that they were open to ideas. But then Mr. Netanyahu arrived here. He landed in New York, and his first statement to the media as he got off the plane was to say, look, the Israeli military are going to keep hitting Hezbollah as hard as it can with all its might until Israeli citizens, displaced, evacuated citizens, are back safely in their homes in northern Israel. At the same time, in Israel, lots of hostility and anger about this idea of a ceasefire from politicians across the political spectrum. But then there was a little bit of a pushback here. There were the White House put out a statement saying, well, you know, yes, we've heard this, but actually, this statement was coordinated in line with the Israelis. In other words, they knew it was coming. They'd been part of the process. It didn't come out of nowhere. You also had talks taking place, intensive talks between the Americans and the Israelis to try and give this a little bit of life. Essentially, the argument the Americans are making is that, look, if you have an aggressive military incursion on the ground by the Israelis, you have risk all-out war, and all-out war will not make northern Israel safer, whereas some kind of negotiated political settlement will do that. That's the argument the Americans are making.
So that's our diplomatic correspondent, James Landau. We appreciate the need for clarity in all of this. So we've asked the BBC security correspondent, Frank Gardner, to explain how we got to this point.
Well, you could go right back to 1982, which is when Israel invaded Lebanon to drive out the PLO, the Palestine Liberation Organization, which they did. But they were replaced as Israel's enemy by Hezbollah, which was Iran's creation. It was their kind of proxy army. And Israel stayed in Lebanon for 18 years. But more recently, this began on October the 8th last year, when Hezbollah, which is a Iranian-backed Shiite militia and a political party in Lebanon, started shelling the Israeli side of the border. So they did that in support, they said, of the Palestinians in Gaza. Both Hamas and Hezbollah view Israel as the enemy, and they started lobbing rockets and drones and shells and missiles into northern Israel. And that's been going on for 11 months. So finally, Israel decided they wanted to deal with that bit of the border to be able to drive Hezbollah back and make it safe for their own residents to come back and live in their farms and businesses in the north of Israel.
That's our security correspondent, Frank Gardner, giving us some context in how we got here, essentially. Let's talk to Libby now. Libby's been in Beirut for the past month and has been working for a charity. Libby, good morning.
Good morning. How are you?
Very well. More importantly, how are you? How are things there? You're a British citizen, and I know you're trying to get out, but how are things at the moment?
To be honest, where we are, I've not left the northeast of Beirut for quite a while now, like a week. No, less than a week, a few days. It's much safer where we are here. And it's very, if you didn't know something was going on, you probably wouldn't know something was going on, apart from the fact that it's quite quiet. And obviously it's been stressful not being able to get out, especially with Keir Starmer telling us we need to leave immediately. And none of us can book any flights until next Wednesday, which is when I've booked a flight to Cairo. But the stress is whether or not there'll actually be an airport by then. Who knows?
Right. And tell us why you can't get out till next Wednesday.
There's no space on any commercial flights. We had a flight booked on Wednesday evening to Cairo, and that was cancelled. Basically, the only airline that's running is Middle Eastern Airlines, MEA, and all the flights are getting booked up like crazy.
Mm. So did you say you were on a flight and it was cancelled, so you've had to kind of rebook?
Yes, exactly.
Okay. And how did you get that information?
What, that it was cancelled?
Yeah.
The airline let us know. It was a pretty normal sort of cancellation procedure.
How does that leave you feeling? As you say, on the one hand, you're getting messages from the British Prime Minister, you know, get out now, and you're trying your damnedest to get out. Do you think the British government could be doing more to help you get out?
To be honest, up until, I can't remember if it was yesterday or the day before, we couldn't register our presence. So there was all this talk of an evacuation plan, etc. And we were all sort of sat there like, well, the registration to let them know our presence hasn't been open since we've been here. If they do an evacuation, which seemed through the language like it was going to be imminent, we were all like, okay, well, they're not going to know that we're here. There'll be an evacuation plan. So that was really, that caused quite a lot of anxiety. But then they opened that. So that's better. I feel like the government, that Keir is sort of telling, it's like sort of telling us off, like leave immediately. And we're all like, we're trying. But I'm not sure that there's much more that they could do. Apart from perhaps charter a flight, but that probably seems a bit ridiculous. But yeah.
And as far as kind of British officials on the ground, any kind of consul contact, any, do you feel there's anyone there you can go and talk to about this?
No, we actually went to the embassy on Wednesday afternoon to try and register our presence. This is before we could do it online, and there was literally no one there. And we were like, okay, it doesn't really feel like there's many people we can talk to.
So are they all already gone, or were they just, yeah, there just wasn't anybody there? Have they cleared out?
No. They haven't. They've not left yet. It was their day had finished, but right, even though it said it was open.
So mixed messages. On the one hand, this sense of urgency from the Prime Minister, but when you try and get out and get help there, there's very little in evidence.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
And how does this leave you feeling, finally, Libby? And I guess your family back home must be pretty concerned that you're stuck out there till next week.
Well, yeah, that's the problem. It's my family, really, because I know that I'm safe where I am, and that the likelihood of anything happening to me here is incredibly slim. But of course, it's really hard to explain that to your friends and family who are anxiously watching the news. I get so many texts of people worried about if I'm safe or not. And that's not a great feeling, to feel as if the guilt that I feel. Obviously, I came out here to do a job, and I feel bad that I've put myself in danger and that my family are worried.
Listen, don't feel bad and don't feel guilt. I know it's easier said than done, but this is clearly nothing to do with you. And we wish you a safe passage out of the country.
Thank you so much.
We will check back in with you, Libby. Thank you so much for talking to us.
No worries. Have a great day.
And you, Libby there, who's in the northeast of Beirut. She's on a flight, but not until next Wednesday, 16 past six.
The Prime Minister had a busy time during his trip to New York. Met Donald Trump, the Republican presidential candidate, of course, former President Donald Trump, for the first time. Now, before the meeting, Trump was asked by a reporter what he thought about Keir Starmer.
Well, I'm going to see him in about an hour, so I have to be nice, right? But I actually think he's very nice. I think he ran a great race. He did very well. It's very early, but he's popular, and I'll be seeing him, and I'll send you regards.
Well, they met for dinner at Trump Tower. Our political editor, Chris Mason, sent us this voice note.
Hello from the Prime Minister's plane. We are somewhere over the Atlantic on our way back from New York to London. So Keir Starmer has been in New York for the last couple of days at what's known as the UN General Assembly, annual gathering, loads of world leaders, lots of talk, as you'd expect, about Lebanon and about Israel and Gaza and the Middle East and Ukraine. But a little twist at the end of the trip, this two-hour dinner at Trump Tower on Fifth Avenue in New York. Prime Minister had never met Donald Trump before, and he took the chance because Donald Trump was in New York. In fact, Donald Trump did a news conference just before the meeting in which he described Keir Starmer as actually very nice. He ran a great race. It's very, very early. He's very popular. And the Prime Minister had also told us before the dinner that he thought it was important to establish a relationship between the two of us. But here's a twist. The Foreign Secretary, David Lammy, was also at this meeting. And he once described his host as a woman-hating, neo-Nazi-sympathising sociopath and a tyrant in a toupee. Now, the Prime Minister has also never met Donald Trump's Democratic rival. That's the Vice President, Kamala Harris. She was in Washington yesterday alongside the President, President Biden, meeting President Zelensky of Ukraine. Downing Street saying that he would like to speak to the Vice President, but there had been the usual diary challenges. So the Prime Minister going about trying to see as many leaders as he possibly can at the moment, many of whom he has never met, including people who are not actually leaders right now, or at least heads of government or heads of state, Donald Trump among them.
Yeah, there we are then. So that was our political editor, Chris Mason, after that dinner between Sir Keir Starmer, David Lammy as well, and Donald Trump. We'll talk about Manchester City facing Newcastle United tomorrow. It's the lunchtime kickoff. We'll do that shortly. It's 19 minutes past six.
Football on BBC Radio 5 Live.
Listen to exclusive live commentaries from the Premier League, Champions League and more with the 5 Live sport team.
He's been on the pitch for 10 seconds. Thank you very much.
Stay on top of everything football every day with the Football Daily Podcast.
This is the best central defensive partnership in European football.
His confidence levels are through the roof.
Football on 5 Live.
Listen on BBC Sound. 5 Live Breakfast. In my opinion.
In my opinion.
In my opinion.
And in my opinion.
Now, today's In My Opinion comes from, it's Kim Kardashian. No, hang on, she hasn't picked up the phone. It's from you, isn't it, Claire? Next best thing, really.
Yeah, thanks.
Let's be honest.
It's going to be next best thing. Switch that order around.
Yeah.
Yes, it is from me.
Yeah, and what is it?
Because I was asked to do one. No, one of my pet peeves is pointless phrases.
Okay, yeah.
Pointless phrases.
I've got loads of
those. Take a listen. Things like these.
Mm-hmm.
In and of itself. For real. It is what it is. At the end of the day. And it goes without saying.
Well, if it goes without saying, why are you saying it? Do you know what I mean?
I mean,
said, do you know what I mean? And that annoys me as well.
If they were all said over that music, I would happily listen every time someone said it. You know, that was beautiful, wasn't it? I've got a mate who says, it's one of them. At the end of virtually everything. If he doesn't say that, then I think, well, what is it if it isn't one of them?
What is one of them?
So, you know,
that's a catch-all phrase, isn't it?
It is, it is.
It's a meaningless phrase, Chris.
Yeah, okay. I'm sort of with you. I'm sure most of us have all probably got one or two, haven't we?
I'm literally putting my hands up here and saying, I annoy myself.
What do you say?
I think I say, do you know what I mean?
I say, you do know what I mean.
And you know.
I get text messages from listeners saying, we know what you mean, Chris. You don't need to keep saying, do you know what I mean?
And so. I do send those texts in occasionally, Chris.
Yeah, I know.
So that kind of thing, please add to our list. We'll be discussing it further throughout the programme, but if you'd like to get it off your chest.
Yes.
Pointless phrases. No value added, just pointless. Mm-hmm. Cut it out. 85058 or send us a voice note 0808 590 9693.
Well, I mean, as we step into the world of football, they are absolutely everywhere.
Littered with it.
Aren't they? Good wins for Spurs and Rangers in the Europa League last night. Arsenal, Manchester City, Celtic all made it to the group stage of the Women's Champions League. We'll talk more about that after 7 o'clock. For now, though, another busy weekend of Premier League action coming up for you on 5 Live. We'll bring you four commentaries, live commentaries, starting with Arsenal versus Leicester. That's at 3 o'clock tomorrow. Manchester City travelling to Newcastle in the early kickoff. Pep Guardiola's side looking to strengthen their position at the top of the table. Newcastle going to be hoping they can bounce back from what would have been a disappointing defeat to Fulham last weekend. Let's speak to fans of both clubs. Kendall Rowan is a Newcastle United fan. Rachel is a Manchester City supporter. Good morning, both.
Good morning.
Rachel Hurst.
Morning.
Yeah, hi.
And what, just one for your phrase back
there.
Oh,
yeah,
well.
go on, yeah.
To be honest with you.
Yeah, all
because,
right.
Because if you stay in, to be honest with you, that's saying, well, the rest of the time I'm lying.
Yeah, that's
there's no need to prefix
maybe
it.
Maybe they are. Maybe they are.
Chris.
Maybe they are lying the rest of the time. Did you call it the phrase bag there? I quite liked, is that how you described it? The phrase bag.
Yeah.
We can use that, Claire. We can run with that. now, I need to tell you, Kendall, a little stat here. Manchester City have scored in each of their past 31 Premier League games against Newcastle, the longest scoring streak one team has against another in Premier League history.
Lovely way to start.
What do you make of that?
Lovely way to start a Friday off. Yeah, you know what? It's obviously, where Man City are in in their sort of timeline and where we are is very, 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 very different. But yeah, it doesn't shock me at all, really.
No, I suppose it's not particularly shocking. Rachel, been quite the week for you guys, hasn't it? Have you got over Sunday yet? Have you got your head around the Rodri situation yet?
Yeah, the Rodri situation is obviously a bit of a disaster for us. That said, you know, we're top of the table and he's not really featured very heavily. So if any team can cope with an injury, it's City, but he is undoubtedly one of the best players in the world. So it's last year when he was suspended, he got sent off against Forest, I think it was. He was suspended for three games and we lost all three of those. So that doesn't bode well, but you know, there's only so many games he can play anyway through the season. It's been a problem for us for the last two or three seasons. Mm-hmm.
Who's going to go in that role instead? I mean, Kovacic has stepped in there a few times, hasn't he? And he has been good in it.
Yeah, I would imagine it'll be Kovacic. I think tomorrow I don't expect the game to be won or lost there anyway. You know, for me now, De Bruyne, fingers crossed he'll be back tomorrow because we're playing without Rodri and De Bruyne. That's really difficult. Mm. The other thing now is to make sure that you know, our goals this season, Haaland is absolutely on fire, but there doesn't seem to be anybody else chipping in. Mm. If for any reason we used to lose him, then I think we really would be in trouble.
Yeah. Now, Rowan, you've had to, I mean, it's been a good start. There's no doubt. Good results in the Premier League. I wonder if they've been great performances. And I ask that because the first Premier League defeat of the season last weekend, of course, against Fulham. Our man, Statman Dave, was saying that there should be concern about the number of shots that you are conceding. Not necessarily goals, but shots. Conceding 61 shots in five games from inside the penalty area, which he says should be a cause of concern. Is it amongst fans at the moment?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think you're right, Chris. We haven't played well at all this season, even though we have been getting results, obviously, bar last weekend. We haven't played well at all. And it has been worrying to watch. It's took us a long time to get into games, even at home, which is, you know, our fortress, as we like to call it. It's somewhere that we feel comfortable playing usually. It's somewhere that we feel confident playing usually. And that's not the case. We haven't been the better side in probably every single game this season, despite getting the results. But it is worrying, the defensive situation. Obviously, we did lose Fabian Schär for three games at the beginning of the season because he got sent off in the first game of the season. So that didn't really end particularly well for us, having it the first game of the season without him. We're without Botman as well. So that was with us without our two main centre-backs there. So we're kind of having a makeshift back line at the moment. We don't know which is the best way.
Yeah.
The gap between the defence and the midfield's a little bit concerned at the moment. So yeah, it is a major concern because it's something that we've been so good at.
Oh, well, makeshift back lines are perfect when you're facing Erling Haaland, aren't they? That just sounds great.
But if you're still picking up points and you're not playing well, that's always a sign of a good team, they say, don't
that's
they?
True. That is 100% true. Sorry, I'm very aware I just called you Rowan as well, which is a bit familiar, isn't it, given it's your surname. I'm not calling Rachel Herdson. All right, Herdson. Yeah, no, that's not happening. Anyway, look, I'll let you both go, but enjoy the game and thanks for talking to us. Cheers. Kendall Rowan, Newcastle United fan, and Rachel Herdson, Manchester City supporter. So we've got four commentaries, as I say. Cross Five Live this weekend. Arsenal versus Leicester at 3 o'clock on Saturday. It'll be followed, Claire, by Wolves against Liverpool at 5:30.
Well, thanks for passing on that information. Mm-hmm. I think, in my opinion, it's fair to say we have lit the touch
it's going
paper
off
and retired. The text console has gone into meltdown. We'll get through some of those in a moment, but keep them coming in. Pointless phrases that drive you nuts. That is in my opinion today. I know I'm guilty of adding them in. Basically, this is therapy for me as much as all of you, so we can try and like purge them from our language. 850-58. Now, we're going to talk about something of an unlikely pairing now. Kim Kardashian and Elizabeth Taylor. Kardashian, I just read a surname there. Kim Kardashian has been talking to the BBC about being the last person to interview the Hollywood icon before she died in 2011. Now, she's the executive producer on a new series called Elizabeth Taylor, Rebel Superstar, which you can see on the iPlayer now. In an exclusive interview, she told the BBC why she wanted to be involved.
I think why I wanted to do this is to ensure that her legacy will continue, right? I think there's like so many young people that I want to remind or even teach them about who she is. I think I was like completely blown away at a time when I wore like a Marilyn Monroe dress, and I saw on TikTok, like people were searching and to figure out who that is. And I thought to myself, well, like my icon is Elizabeth Taylor, and I would never want anyone to have to, in this generation, to have to like search and see who that is.
Well, Kim Kardashian was speaking to the BBC show Lily, who joins us now. Good morning.
Hiya.
So she talked a little bit there about her wanting to keep the legacy of Elizabeth Taylor alive, and that's why she stepped in to do this documentary, to actually shine some light on the fact that she was the last person to talk to her. Why was she so inspired by her? What did she tell you?
Yeah, I mean, what stuck with me most about speaking with Kim was just how in awe of Elizabeth she was. You know, it was clear that this is someone she really does admire. And she actually told me about how she had dated Michael Jackson's nephew, and she would always hear about Elizabeth Taylor, you know, and see paintings of the actress in the singer's home because Michael and Elizabeth had been such close friends. And so she was just always very much aware of the iconic Hollywood actress, but I think also a lot of her admiration for the star came from learning about how passionate she was for speaking for those that were voiceless. You know, Kim said that Elizabeth really understood her power and her beauty, and she used that to spotlight causes that mattered to her.
Yes, she certainly did. She was a massive ally of the gay community, and early days as well. She also was the last person to interview Elizabeth Taylor.
Yeah, so this might come as a bit of a surprise to people, but Kim was the last person to have a published interview of Elizabeth before she died in 2011. And she'd actually been doing a photo shoot for a magazine, and it was inspired by Elizabeth's iconic 1963 film, Cleopatra. And I mean, we all know those photos and the pictures from that film, right? And so they wanted Kim to interview Elizabeth to go alongside it. And they spoke about everything, you know, from jewellery to love. And actually, you can hear Kim explain a little bit about what that was like here.
I was asking her about her jewelry collection. The one thing that stuck out the most to me was that she was very aware these are just in her custody, but that she knows that won't leave with her and she won't die with them. And I think at the time in my life where I was at, I really did value maybe material things a bit more. And I didn't understand that lesson and that meaning at that time.
And it's interesting, Jola, isn't it? Because you mentioned her activism and Kim Kardashian kind of being that bridge between people who maybe never really heard of Elizabeth Taylor, but they might be interested in what Kim Kardashian says about it. So why does she feel it's important to shine a light on that?
Yeah, I mean, what was really clear was Kim explained how inspiring she thought Star was for fighting for people, particularly AIDS patients, and how she would speak to anyone and everyone to help raise funds and awareness, and that included then US President Ronald Reagan. And Kim said, you know, in fact, Elizabeth was someone that she looks to when approaching her own activism work in the form of prison reform. And, you know, notably, Kim has been to the White House to speak on that topic. So I think for her, the icon was really an inspiration. And ultimately, I think people want Kim wants people to remember, you know, Elizabeth had this incredible life, but she was also a really incredible person, and that her activism should be remembered at the core of that.
Thank you so much for joining us. The BBC show, Lily, who's been interviewing Kim Kardashian, and you can watch Elizabeth Taylor, Rebel Superstar. It airs on BBC Two, 9 o'clock today, and all three episodes are available right now on the BBC iPlayer. Still to come on Five Live Breakfast. We talked earlier this week about the hit show My Mum, Your Dad. We're going to hear from one of the stars of the show. Maria is going to join us in the next half hour, just after 6:30.
This is BBC Radio 5 Live.
And your headlines. Sir Keir Starmer uses first speech to the UN as Prime Minister to call for a ceasefire between Israel and Hezbollah. He told the General Assembly in New York it was vital that both sides step back from the brink.
The Prime Minister has also held a two-hour meeting with Donald Trump in New York. Sir Keir says he's hoped to meet the Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris as well, but had been unable to because of diary challenges.
The Treasury is reconsidering Labour's manifesto plan to tighten the rules on non-dom tax status, which was scrapped by the last Conservative government. BBC News understands there are concerns about how much money it would raise if wealthy foreigners left the UK.
And the charity Age UK says there's been a significant rise in the number of older people in England struggling to get the social care they need. The government says it's committed to creating a high-quality national care service. Let's get you updated on the weather. Simon's here. Morning, Simon.
Morning, Claire, Chris. There could be some pretty challenging conditions this morning on your morning commute or routine because we've had some very heavy rainfall overnight across central and southern areas of England, and it is still raining. Some parts of central southern England have had their wettest month ever recorded. In Woburn, in Bedfordshire, for example, four times the average September rainfall has already fallen. Flood warnings are increasing through this morning across parts of Yorkshire and the Midlands. So that rain is moving southward. Eventually, it is going to clear across many areas. It will take the longest to clear from southeastern areas of England. And elsewhere across England and Wales, there'll be some sunny spells developing, but a rather brisk northerly wind is going to make it feel pretty chilly, actually, today. Maximum temperatures 11 to 14 degrees Celsius. Drier and brighter for Scotland and Northern Ireland. Some sunny spells from the word go, really. A few showers coming in on a rather brisk northerly wind, highs of 7 to 12 degrees. And then for the weekend, it's looking much drier for Saturday across England and Wales. More cloud for Scotland and Northern Ireland. A dry and a cold start on Sunday. However, further heavy rain and strong winds are likely to come in as we go through Sunday across England and Wales.
Thank you very much indeed, Simon. Ellie is here. It's nice to see you here,
lovely
Ellie. Been having a lovely time on Radio 2, haven't you?
I've been moonlighting elsewhere, but I'm back. Back where I belong.
Good to see you.
And unfortunately, I'm back when it's absolute chaos. As Simon was saying, weather is causing problems. There's quite a few roads that are flooded this morning. Major routes include the M5 southbound. That is closed between Junction 14 at Thornbury to 15 at the Almondsbury interchange. You've got congestion to the Michael Wood services there, a couple of miles in traffic. Also the M5 northbound, this is closed between 16 Aztec West and 14. There are a lot of routes locally, so worth double checking this morning. So far the trains look okay, but I shall keep you updated. Aside from the weather, the M1 northbound, it is closed. This is between Junction 5 at Watford and 6 at North Watford. Overrunning roadworks there, you've got congestion to the A41. And the M25, the Dartford Tunnel, anti-clockwise, two lanes are closed because of a broken down vehicle. That is between Junction 1A to Junction 31. Congestion there is back to 1B currently. Ellie Brennan, 5 Live Travel.
The voice of the UK.
This is 5 Live Breakfast.
Nick Hatton's got your sports news this morning. Morning again, Nick.
Morning.
Positive starts for British sides in the Europa League last night.
Yeah, a decent amount of goals as well. Tottenham and Rangers both winning. So, yeah, less than 10 minutes into Tottenham's Europa League game. At home to Carabag last night, you were maybe expecting a difficult night for Spurs. Radu Dragosin sent off after just 7 minutes for a last-man challenge. Spurs, though, put in a really impressive performance, winning 3-0 in the end. Brennan Johnson, a man in form. He fired home just 5 minutes after Dragosin was sent off. That's his third goal in as many games. So 1-0 at the break. Papi Matasar and Dominic Solanke wrapping things up. Solanke's now 2-2. He's finding some form after an injury-interrupted season since his summer move from Bournemouth. Here is his boss, Ange Postecoglou.
The one thing about him is he just keeps going. But yeah, great for him to get another goal tonight. But just his all-round performance, I thought, was really, really, really strong. When you're down to 10 men, you need your striker to be able to hold up the play and do some hard running, which I thought he did.
Where is Karabakh?
Azerbaijan.
Is it indeed?
Azerbaijan. So a long trip for them.
That is, yeah. Okay, good. Good. Good info. Good knowledge. Thank you.
Good win for Rangers as well last night. They won 2-0 away at Malmo. Nedim Bayrami and Ross McCausland's goal enough for Philippe Clement's side to claim all 3 points. He considered it their best performance of the season.
Yes, I think so. But doesn't mean it's going to stay the best. I think we need to work hard to make it better and better. What we're going to do.
A big night last night in the Women's Champions League as well. We'll talk about that in due course, but it was a particularly special night for Celtic.
Yeah, they are the first Scottish side to qualify for the Women's Champions League group stage since it was introduced in 2021. They are the first Scottish team to enter this phase of the competition. Glasgow City, though, twice reached the quarterfinals in the previous knockout format. They were leading 1-0 from the first leg. Headers from Emma Lawton and Shannon McGregor, though, completed the job against the Ukrainian side Vorskla Poltava. Here is Lawton.
A bit surreal, to be fair. It's not sunk in, but yeah, I'm just buzzing and can't wait.
So Celtic will find out their group opponents in this lunchtime's draw. Also in that draw will be Arsenal and Manchester City. Arsenal scoring 4 to overturn their 1-0 first leg deficit against Hecken. While Manchester City were 3-0 winners at home to Paris FC to go through 8-0 on aggregate. Their manager Gareth Taylor excited for a busy season.
We're going to be playing every 3 or 4 days with the WSL and the Champions League, and that's what we want. I think at times it puts a strain on the squad, but I think you've seen the strength and depth we have tonight. Lauren Hemp and Viv Miedema don't get onto the field, so I think it's good in that sense.
Elsewhere, England goalkeeper Mary Earps and last season's semi-finalist Paris Saint-Germain suffered a shock exit in the qualifying stages. They were beaten 5-2 over two legs by Juventus. Tonight in the Women's Super League, Crystal Palace hosts the champions Chelsea. In tennis, Jack Draper's through to the third round of the Japan Open. He beat the second seed Hubert Hurkacz in straight sets. In cricket, England once again in must-win territory in the fourth one-day international against Australia at Lord's. There's coverage on Five Sports Extra from 12:15. And the Super League playoffs begin tonight from 8:30 on Sports Extra. You can hear Salford Red Devils versus the Lee Leopards in the elimination playoff. A place in next week's semi-finals are at stake.
Nick, thank you very much indeed. It is a Five Live Breakfast. It's Chris and Claire with you this morning. Now, take a listen to this.
It's a matter on the dance floor, but you better not kill the groove.
The Times is reporting that Chancellor Rachel Reeves is going to rewrite the UK's fiscal rules so she can find as much as £50 billion for big infrastructure projects such as roads, housing and energy. Fliss Hannah is here from Wake Up to Monday. Morning, Fliss.
Good morning.
I didn't quite get the musical reference there.
The musical reference will become clear.
Okay.
With the next story, if we get there. Right. A bit of a devastation for UK nightclubs.
What's that got to do?
If Rachel Reeves is listening this morning, she's thinking, wow, that is a brutal inline.
This is tangential, isn't it? This is stretching it a bit. Anyway, yes. Yeah, so
keep
bank
that music in mind.
Keep that in. Keep that in your memory bank. Yeah. All will become clear. So let's talk then, first of all, about Chancellor Rachel Reeves, Fliss.
Yes, OK. So this is the Times is reporting this morning that senior government sources are suggesting that she might change the fiscal rules. I know, listen, I can hear people switching off over their cornflakes. The fiscal rules are important here. These are the rules that kind of put limits on how much the government can borrow and how it manages its debt. There's some suggestion that she could change the way the books are kind of balanced. So the government could offset its assets, things like, for example, the 236 billion quid owned in student loans, against the wider national debt. And that would free up more money for investment. And that's really, really key here. The rule change they're talking about is not to give the government more spending power to spend on day-to-day stuff. So anyone who's thinking, oh, perhaps that would mean they could reverse the cut to the winter fuel allowance, for example, that's not the kind of thing the government is potentially considering. It's looking at freeing up this investment, rebalancing the books in a way that allows it to spend more on infrastructure. So to spend more on transport links and hospitals and the things that will sit within our economy and continue giving value for decades to come.
So pretty significant. Can you put figures on that?
Well, I mean, essentially, this 50 billion number comes from the last budget. So economists calculated that if these rules had been in place at the time of the last budget, there would have been £50 billion worth of additional headroom. And that is important because we've seen really sluggish growth for years. And that can feel quite divorced from people's everyday lives. But actually, you know, it makes a difference to how much people can ask for in their pay packets. It makes a difference to, you know, what the government can afford to spend on everyday, you know, kind of spending and on infrastructure. So growth really, really matters. I will say, though, that although that might give her that 50 billion quid headroom, she's still expected to raise taxes in order to increase that day-to-day spending. So what they're very scared of or nervous of doing is looking like it's just a bit of a free-for-all, you know, spending event and then spooking the markets, which is what we saw with Liz Truss's mini-budget. So they're trying to show, look, we're being very, very fiscally prudent, but we are going to free up some money for investment. And I should say, this is something that economists have been calling for a long time, because at the moment you've got the fiscal rules where borrowing has to be falling within a five-year period. That actually stops governments from spending money on investments, but it still means that national debt can go up, because all you need to prove is that within 5 years, debt will be falling. I think it's sometimes been called the little orphan Annie rule, because the sun will come out tomorrow.
Like that. And also, apparently, Fliss, there are new figures on nightclubs. Hit
it's
it.
It's murder on the dance floor.
But you better not kill the groove.
Well, doesn't yes, this music all, make sense now?
We've all swum around the bowl, completely forgotten what happened 2 minutes ago. Tell us about nightclubs.
Well, this is some worrying numbers, thus this song. Some worrying numbers for nightclubs. This is the latest statistics from CGA Nielsen, showing there's been a really significant decline in the number of nightclubs across the UK. So if you look just this year, 65 nightclubs have closed down. So between December 23 and June this year, 65 have closed. Between June 2020 and June this year, the UK has lost 480 nightclubs. So typically, that's pretty much two a week. And it's interesting, it's not the same across the UK. So Yorkshire is the hardest hit nightclub area. It has lost, according to this research, 45% of its venues over the last year. So that's almost one in every two clubs. London, as you might expect, has been hit the least. But even there, it's lost its nightclub spaces by almost a third. And the Nighttime Industry Association says these numbers need to be a bit of a wake-up call. They're calling on the Chancellor to do things like extend business rates relief in her budget to protect small businesses like this. But, Claire, it's really interesting. I think that there's a sort of shift in how people are spending their money in the evenings. Last Friday, I spoke to the boss of a hot chocolate cafe chain, and he was saying that they're having massive growth because young people are increasingly going out for a nice cup of cocoa in the evenings instead of, you know, perhaps hitting the bars at 10 p.m. and staying there till 3.
Yeah,
I Chris mean, Warburton looks sceptical.
Well, I'm making no comment. They can do what they like.
Habits change, and I think you need to offer it like a mixed offering these days, isn't it? Really, if you want to kind of keep up with how young people are changing how they go out.
Yeah. I would go to a nightclub where you could get a hot chocolate. That's just, so me at this age.
Just stay in and have one. you can get the latest from the Wake Up to Money podcast on BBC Sounds. Before you go, Fliss,
yes.
My opinion today is pointless phrases that add no meaning to what people are saying. So many of you getting in touch. Stephen, Letch, Dale, you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. We do know what you mean, Steve. Mm-hmm. this one from Jason in Sheffield. He says, I completely agree with Claire, and today's my opinion. What really gets me is when people say, look or listen at the start of a sentence. We are looking and listening. We don't need reminding. Love the show, said Jason. Jason, politicians do that.
That's buying time, isn't
it? Look, look.
And it also makes you sound quite assertive, doesn't it? Yeah. Look.
Look, yes. What I'm about to say is important.
Really matters.
Do you have one, Fliss?
Now, I get a ridiculous number of press releases. My inbox every day is you wouldn't believe how many unread emails are in my inbox. It's about 190,000 at the moment. And most of those are press releases. And they so often contain phrases that make my blood boil. Going forward and future focused. And no one is going backwards. No one is focused on the past. Just say the thing your business is going to do and say it quickly. But instead you get this kind of very, very future focused, looking forward word salad. And I hate it.
Okay, it's in the pot. Keep them coming in. There's loads, Chris.
I think the problem we might have with this morning is that obviously now we are under the microscope for meaningless phrases.
Well, I put my hands up, absolutely, because when you talk for a living and you kind of buy time and sometimes you haven't quite fully formed the thought.
That's right.
It's like self-therapy, really, because I want to get it out of my system.
It. But
it's
one listener is saying, Claire just said literally, which is the worst meaningless phrase going, but I think I
agree.
Do. I do it as well, but it's just how it is, isn't it?
Absolutely.
It's how it is.
It's how it is.
Right, stop
it,
I'm going to stop talking.
Stop talking. Right.
Give us some entries for the phrase bag, which I thought was a nice way of putting it by Rachel, our Manchester City fan earlier on. 85058 is the number. It's 6:47.
This is all smoke and mirrors. That's sales.
On BBC iPlayer.
What have you got to offer me?
Look, this is in all of our interests, right?
The new series of Industry.
I'm so glad you came.
Starring Kit Harington.
I'm an investment banker. Did you invite me here to watch you eat?
No, I invited you here to seduce you.
I've never met anyone with a bigger blind spot.
All's fair in love and war, right?
I needed my friend and you used me.
Industry.
Now, we go to work.
Starts Tuesday on BBC iPlayer.
6:48, it's Claire and Chris with you this morning on 5 Live Breakfast. Hope you're doing okay. Now, let's talk about gambling. Gambling messages during the opening weekend of this season's Football Premier League almost trebled since last year. According to new research, experts are warning this could be putting fans, including children, at risk. The findings say the explosion of gambling marketing shows the industry's current self-regulation, for what that is what it is failing. Some leading experts and politicians want the government to make tackling the issue a top priority. Dr. Raffaello Rossi is a marketing researcher at the University of Bristol. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Chris. Thanks for having
me. Well, thank you. Talk us through the evidence you collated. What are your findings here? This was over the course of one weekend, the opening weekend.
It was, exactly. So basically, during this opening weekend of this year's Premier League season, we found around 30,000 gambling messages, which included logos on the players' shirts, on pitch side hoardings, in commercials, social media, and so on. And the worst match we've looked at was West Ham versus Aston Villa, where we found around 6,500 gambling messages, which basically means that gambling marketing was visible in around half of the entire match. So out of the 90 minutes, you would see gambling marketing for around 45 minutes.
How has there been a tripling over the same period, you know, last year? How is that possible?
Yeah, I know. It's unbelievable. So basically last year we did exactly the same thing, same metrics, you know, the opening weekend and so on. And we found 11,000. So this year it's 30,000, almost trebling. So I think that there's a couple of reasons. I mean, first of all, you know, we saw in the Premier League that now 11 out of 20 clubs have gambling sponsors on their shirt, mm-hmm. which is four more than last year. So, but that doesn't really explain the massive increase, because what we saw was an increase across the board. So more marketing on pitch side hoardings, on stadium structure, so-called sponsorship lead in. On Sky Sports News, it doubled from 2,000 gambling messages in one day to 4,000. So there wasn't a single reason. It just seems that the industry is investing much more in marketing.
Which is slightly ironic, given this year a new code of conduct was published, wasn't it, by the industry to curb marketing during football. That was the idea. Anyway, what did that consist of? And what's your conclusion as to how well that's been adhered to? I mean, it's pretty obvious what your answer is going to be.
Yeah, I mean, this, you know, the background to the sponsorship code of conduct, which was co-developed by the football leagues and the Betting and Gaming Council, was basically that, you know, there was huge pressure on this topic for years from government and media, saying there's too much marketing during sporting events. So the leagues then decided we need to do something around that. And one of the main aims was basically to reduce gambling marketing during football. But as we showed, this is not working at all. And it's just adding to, you know, different self-regulatory pieces that are all not working at all.
So we wanted to speak to somebody from the industry, and we did put in lots of calls yesterday, and no one was forthcoming. But I will read you what the Betting and Gaming Council have said. And they say that you have misunderstood the way in which the type of advertising is regulated. They say in a statement, the previous government stated research did not establish a causal link between exposure to advertising and the development of problem gambling. Betting, advertising and sponsorship must comply with strict guidelines and safer gambling tools and signposts to help for those concerned about their betting are regularly and prominently displayed. So they say it's not so much about how much advertising is out there, but how the message is sold and what it goes alongside. What's your assessment of that?
I mean, to be honest, I'm totally confused about the industry's comments. I mean, fundamentally, what we did is we were counting gambling brand logos, right? So they kind of made a similar argument last year where they said, well, this is not really marketing, which is complete nonsense. Of course it is marketing. Otherwise, they wouldn't spend millions of it. And the idea of we need to have a causal link between marketing and harm is something that is virtually impossible in the nature of research. So it's a technicality they just use to deceive the public. We have more than enough evidence that clearly shows the more gambling marketing you see, the more you participate in gambling, and the more likely you are to experience harm.
And it's the kids as well in all of this, isn't it? What difference do you think it might make with the Premier League voluntarily agreeing to withdraw gambling sponsorship from the front of match day shirts? It's the first UK sports league to do so. Comes in from 2026. What difference do you think that will make in the end? I mean, do you just think they'll up advertising elsewhere ultimately?
Exactly. And I mean, so what we found was that out of the 30,000 messages, only 8% was front of shirt. And we've already seeing that they're moving the logos away from the front to the side or the back of the shirt or even on the shorts. And it's just, it's the same story again. It's the industry trying to protect their profits and in you know, introducing legislation that is not policies that are not really designed to work. They know it's not working. It's just, it looks good in the media, but it's not going to have any effect really.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much indeed. Thanks for explaining that to us, Dr. Raffaello Rossi, who's a marketing researcher at the University of Bristol. Nick says it's ironic that gambling companies produce flashy television ads saying how wonderful their products are and then ending it with a warning that gambling can destroy your life. All gambling advertising should be banned the same way as cigarettes are not advertised anywhere, says Nick. Your thoughts on that? Very welcome as well. 85058. It's 6 minutes to seven.
Keep your pointless phrases coming
in.
Yeah. And you are. Please stop saying we're all across it when referring to sports coverage. Hideous, says this text.
Guilty.
In their name. we're across it. Well, of course you are. You're broadcasting it. Neil in Somerset, to be fair.
Mm-hmm.
What does that
to
mean?
To be fair, yeah.
What does it mean?
We've all got mates who, you know, as soon as I hear some of these, I can picture the person I know in my life who says it a lot.
Yeah, you're looking in a mirror, Chris.
Well, that's possibly true. Are there any which you initially hated, which you find yourself using?
No.
Not at all.
Really?
I
not
do
really,
some, because
no.
I hated going forward and I still hate it, but I do sometimes find myself saying it.
Stop it.
I
just
know.
Just stop it.
But it is quite a good way of describing.
Describing what?
What's going into the future,
anyway,
Claire.
85058. We're going down that rabbit hole. 85058, keep those coming in. Now, earlier this week, I was chatting to Rachel about My Mum, Your Dad on ITV. Here's a teaser.
To be in love would mean the world to me. I am ready to love again, definitely.
I've come into the retreat lacking a lot of self-confidence. The time's right to see if anybody wants me.
Enjoy.
Thank you. You enjoy. I'll be watching you.
Nominated by their grown-up kids.
Love you.
A new set of single parents are looking for a second chance at love.
Love you, Bubs.
Love you too.
Can't give him the world right now, but I can try and make it better for him.
It's such an incredible programme. Maria is one of the participants in this. She was listening. She texted us. And I'm delighted to say Maria Lopiano joins us now. Hello, Maria.
Good morning. I'm a bit scared to say, to be fair now.
Don't worry. We haven't got a little checklist.
Yeah.
We haven't got a checklist. It's such a heartwarming program, this. And it's single people in midlife going in and their kids watching them. And I mean, what did you get out of it? Let's start there because it's all over now.
Oh, do you know what? So much. It absolutely kind of exceeded my expectations. I watched it last year and I thought it was a lovely, heartwarming series. Nothing like I'd seen before. And especially with the children getting involved, I thought, what an incredible thing to sort of take part in something where your child is watching you try and sort of navigate life. It's a new surroundings, they're brand new friendships. You've never met these people before. And they're in a bunker watching your every move and conduct. And yeah, I was just like, that. There's no way you could actually do that.
Somewhat
terrified by that.
It's very raw, isn't it? It's you putting yourself out there and opening yourself up in a way that you haven't before. I just want to play this clip. You were very much praised for the way you opened up about loneliness. Let's take a listen to what you said.
I think being in here and being around people, you get all really close and you start thinking going home and you just feel a bit lonely. And because the children have grown up, when they start going, you realise, OK, who needs you now? Because you do become somebody who people rely on and depend on. And then you're not that person.
Oh, my goodness. It's so... I mean, the thing is, what you were doing on that show and you and the other adults in that house was articulating what many people feel but dare not say. Was there this feeling of camaraderie there that you were all actually opening up for the first time about things that are difficult to articulate?
Yeah, it's so weird because going in there, that's not what I expected. I didn't expect to be, you know, sobbing on national television. But you kind of forget that you're being filmed, for sure, when you're doing something like that for 24 hours. And everybody was so honest about their journey, about their story, why they're there. And you couldn't help but, I mean, I know I'm very sort of honest and open anyway and relaxed about talking to people. So, I just sort of got swept up in it and being amongst people, getting up in the morning at 6:30. And I think Andy touched upon it when he came in, you know, being around people that actually do want to talk to you, not your kids that are like, ugh. but, you know, you'll get up and there's all these people for breakfast. I mean, I just loved living with everybody. But like I said, they just were interested in you and they wanted to talk to you and find out about you. And I think quite often we have friendships that maybe I touched upon it last night are on a superficial level, or we're so busy and it's like, hey, how you doing? Catch up, or the odd text message, but actually delving that little bit deeper, you don't. And this program, brought out such emotion.
We don't have much time left, Maria, but also what struck me was like the children, kind of the emotional articulacy, they're articulately full stop, but the fact that they were pushing you to kind of, they could see who you wanted to be and they were trying to encourage you to be that person, to let your guard down, to sit in yourself and be confident in that. Have you reached that point, do you think? Has the program helped you do that?
Yeah, I'm definitely more open with, because like I said, I am chatty. I have a lot of friends. It's not about not having friends, it's about what you tell your friends or what you delve into. And I'm a lot better at that, because I'd normally be a person that would seem all great, but actually sometimes, you know, you need to go a bit deeper and be a bit more honest.
Well, listen, you've really set the bar for everybody else to follow. It's a fantastic show and you were brilliant in it. Maria, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me.
The Voice of the UK.
This is 5 Live Breakfast.
Good morning, it's 5 Live Breakfast. Chris and Claire with you today, 7 o'clock. Here are your news headlines. Israel is coming under increased diplomatic pressure to reach a ceasefire with Hezbollah. At the UN General Assembly in New York, the Lebanese foreign minister said the entire Middle East was at risk of conflict. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu will address the meeting later today. Sir Keir Starmer used his first speech at the UN to call for an end to the fighting.
Meanwhile, the Prime Minister has had a two-hour dinner with Donald Trump in New York. Sir Keir is now flying back to the UK. Our political editor Chris Mason is travelling with him and sent this report from the plane.
This was the first time Sir Keir Starmer had met Donald Trump. Beforehand, the Prime Minister told us it was important to establish a relationship between the two of us. Also, prior to the dinner, Mr. Trump had said, "I actually think he's very nice. He ran a great race. It's very early. He's very popular." Alongside Sir Keir at the meeting, the Foreign Secretary David Lammy, who once described his host as a woman-hating, neo-Nazi-sympathising sociopath and a tyrant in a toupee.
Sir Keir said he'd also hoped to meet the Democratic presidential nominee Kamala Harris, but had been unable to because of diary challenges.
A man has been arrested in connection with what's been described as an act of cyber vandalism at most of the biggest railway stations in England and Scotland. British Transport Police say the man works for Global Reach Technology, which provides Wi-Fi services to Network Rail. Passengers trying to access Wi-Fi were diverted to a page that police say displayed Islamophobic messaging.
A study has found the number of gambling adverts such as pitchside hoardings and shirt logos during the opening weekend of this season's Premier League were almost treble last year's figures. Researchers from the University of Bristol counted more than 29,000 gambling messages. Peter Shilton is England's most capped male footballer and a former gambling addict.
It's out of control, you know, the gambling industry. They can't regulate themselves. And it doesn't look as though anybody else is bothering to regulate them. So it's another year gone by when it's got a lot worse.
The government said it was committed to strengthening protection for those at risk.
And Coldplay have been